Welcome to this session on Azure Service Fabric. Whenever you're building code for a project, all you really want to do is ship new features and, you know, get your job done, create happy customers and get a happy manager, and everything is all good. Except that there are all these other things that you need to care about. You need to not only care about what features are in your product, you also need to know that it scales to meet customer demand, that it's available for the customers always, and it gives them a good user experience. Preferably, you want to build your product in a really positive, easy, speedy way and have a great, you know, manageable story for the life cycle of your product. You want to make sure that all the data is there and it's just working, and everything should just, honestly, it should be great about your product. Except that, you know, all you ever wanted to do was build those features. So, do you feel like you're ready to go to production? Do you feel that your product is there, has all it needs? You know, these are just a few things. And whenever, you know, here's a hint, whenever in a presentation you see a long list like this with small font and bullet points, the point of this list is not to, you know, you shouldn't read it in detail. You should just get the feeling that there's a lot, right? I mean, you can feel it. There's a lot of things that need to happen before you can go into production. Enter Service Fabric, right? The Microsoft Azure Service Fabric is sort of aimed to help you with all of these other concerns and allow you to focus on what you want to do. So by definition then, Service Fabric is a distributed systems platform that makes it easy to build scalable, reliable, low latency, and easily managed applications for the cloud. This means that you can focus on your business needs and let Service Fabric take care of ensuring your application is always available and scales. And by that, we're going to go back into the actual video recording. Have a good time.
Have looked at or fiddled with the Service Fabric at all? Like three people. Perfect. Because this session is about that. And Service Fabric is a service which is not available yet. It's in preview, and you can get into the preview if you really want to start fiddling with it and get to know it and such. And I hope that after this session, a lot of you will want to do that. But it is not a public product, and in all likelihood, I cannot disclose or you know, I can't confirm nor deny, but in all likelihood, it would seem strange if they managed to get it to a shipped product this year. You know, the normal cycle for Microsoft new services is to have a private preview and then start telling people a little bit about it, and then have a public preview and then have a GA. And you know, Service Fabric is at the start of this cycle. Microsoft is now talking about it publicly. They talked about it the first time publicly at Build this spring. And, you know, roughly if Service Fabric follows the sort of the same path, Service Fabric might be general availability in roughly a year after they first started talking about it. We'll see, because I honestly think that Microsoft themselves don't know right now. It'll ship when it's good and ready. But so it's early days, and therefore this session will be a lot about giving you guys an overview, an intro, so we'll certainly not dig into anything deep or complicated in this session. I am Magnus Martinsson. Hello. It's good to be here. I was the first one to be an Azure MVP in the Nordic countries, so I've been around Azure for a good long time, enjoying myself a lot. That actually turned out to be a really good play back in the day when I became an Azure MVP, because right now, almost everything at Microsoft is about Azure, right? So that's awesome. I also run my own company called LoftySoft, and if you have any questions at all, if you want to reach me, if you who are looking at this recording afterwards want to ask me a question about Service Fabric or about anything else, you should feel free to reach out and email me. That's absolutely not a problem. I'm also what Microsoft call a regional director. That kind of means that I'm a close business associate, trusted partner of Microsoft, and that's great. I feel very, very privileged to be close to my big partner, Microsoft. But I don't, still at the same time, they don't give me a paycheck. So, well, I hang around. Is there anyone in this room who have never heard of Global Azure Bootcamp? Most of you, yeah, or almost all of you have heard about of Global Azure Bootcamp, and I'm showing this mostly also for the benefit of the recording, of course. The Global Azure Bootcamp is a huge global conference that actually started as an idea with Alan and myself, funny enough, 3 or 4 or soon 4 years ago. It'll be the we can disclose, I suppose, that it'll be the fourth Global Azure Bootcamp this spring sometime. We haven't really started talking details about it, but we decided that yes, we will do this again. we obviously don't do all of the work, no way. I mean, all credit goes to all of these locations. Every pin on this map is a location where a one-day Global Azure Bootcamp event takes place on a specific day. Last year it was April 25th or something. Yeah. And we'll see whatever it's going to be this year. On a specific day, all of these locations are user groups across the world that participate in the Global Azure Bootcamp and create a huge set of locations and thousands, if not 10,000 attendees worldwide come together and learn about Azure for a day and go hashtag Global Azure, and we share some global labs and things. It's really fun. I wanted to point that out. But let's get back to the Service Fabric and have some fun with that. Roughly, if I do have an agenda, this is basically it. These are the things we'll talk about. We'll talk about what a microservice is. We'll talk about what the Azure Service Fabric is. And it's sort of been dubbed a little bit Platform as a Service version 2. And the reason I bring that up is that there is sort of a current Platform as a Service offering from Microsoft in Azure now. It's called what? Anyone? What's it called? What can you run in Azure? A. Thank you! Yes, a cloud service. That's correct. Way back when, who remembers this? The first offering in Azure was the cloud service, right? Who was there? Yeah. Some people at the speakers know. some people know that. That was Microsoft's first play in the cloud, was to present us with a cloud service. You could do a worker role and a web role, and they can intercommunicate with an Azure storage queue. And basically, those were all the features of Azure in the first incarnation. And that is still around, and that's still a very valid solution. It's absolutely a fine, great solution. It works beautifully. This is sort of like version two, much hotter stuff. The service fabric, and there's a ton of services in Azure now that weren't there when Azure started out, and of course in between there, let's not forget that Microsoft also has a big stake in running infrastructure as a service, IaaS, running virtual machines in their cloud, right? That's extremely important because actually without virtual machines in their cloud, you couldn't run service fabric. And I will tell you more about that later because Service Fabric runs on a cluster of virtual machines. So that's extremely important that this thing actually works. Running normal virtual machines with normal workloads in Azure is also extremely important. But I'm a developer guy myself, and I'm partial to the platform services. I love platform services because that makes a lot of sense to me. That I can reduce the amount of time spent on playing with or playing. That's a bad word in this context. I don't mean it in a derogatory fashion. Handling virtual machines, right? I want to do code. I want to do applications. I want to do services. And then you would use platform as a service, right? So this is a sort of a small picture with small font and stuff, just to give you an overview. It's meant to like you can just squint and look at it from a distance a little bit to sort of see where we're located here. If you go for control, you go for cloud infrastructure and virtual machines and stuff. Virtual machines are down here. This is IaaS and data and infrastructure and stuff underneath there in the Azure data center, right? That's you get if you're down here working with virtual machines, you have full control. You can do whatever you want with your virtual machines and set them up whichever way you want, et cetera, et cetera. If you raise your sort of If you don't look at the nuts and bolts and the hardware and raise your eyes a little bit further up, or the other way, you go to your application services. You run websites, for instance, or web applications and APIs and things like that. And you basically just say, I just want an environment to host my thing and to run on some type of environment. How many in here have run or deployed a web application to, yeah, a lot of you, web application to Azure? So that's IaaS, right? And the cloud services and the service fabric is right here in the middle, sort of in between, right? It gives you more control than the hosted environment where you have to play by the rules of the hosted environment. It gives you kind of less control and at the same time, you have less maintainability or maintenance costs for your organization if you sort of race one level up from the IaaS level. So that's where we're located, right? And then you have your Visual Studio support and all of that stuff. Cool. So this one is a slide that I've had for a good number of years. While Microsoft loves IaaS, of course, they still believe that PaaS is the best foundation for creating, running, and managing custom applications. That's the way you should think about the world if you can. In some scenarios, you must, or you have to, or you need to, or maybe want to use a virtual machine, then go ahead and do that. But if you go for PaaS, then you'll have more time to do the important things. So Service Fabric has been around for a good long time, and Microsoft haven't talked about it publicly. They've run some of their own biggest services in the Azure platform on Service Fabric in the Azure platform, basically. So SQL database, like something along the lines of, more than 1.4 million databases. Document database, which is fairly new as a service in the Azure platform, runs on Service Fabric. And really, really, really big things, the event hubs, the service bus, the entire service bus in Azure runs on Service Fabric. Bing Cortana allegedly runs on something like several thousands of machines across several data centers. Whoops. Huh. Oh, Cortana? Are you there? Really, that was funny. Go to sleep. That was cool. We got that on video. Nice. I'm not going to say that name. Bing, that name, runs on Service Fabric with thousands of machines. And that's really cool. So Service Fabric has been around for many years and is a really awesome service already. And what Microsoft are doing now is that they are packaging this thing up and making it available to us. The same way they've done with several other services before. They've done the same thing with Office 365, for instance. When Microsoft built Office 365, they needed some sort of authentication and authorization mechanism for the cloud. They had to build a new AD for the cloud. So they built the Azure AD, the AAD. And then once they felt that Azure AD is now really solid and it's millions of people, maybe even tens or 100 million people are logging into Office 365 every day using the Azure AD, they started then to make that available for the rest of us to actually start to use as well. So now we can use AAD. And the same kind of thinking has been behind, of course, the Service Fabric. We have something which is awesome. We have solved a problem. And now we're going to make that available to everyone. So what is the problem then, or the challenge? The challenge of that is that of microservices. Logically, a microservice is some sort of code and maybe some state, some data that you can version and deploy and scale. It's a little piece of an application, and that little piece can be quite large. The SQL database, for instance, is they don't disclose the exact number, but it's something along it's more than five microservices and less than, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, I don't actually know, but it's certainly more than five. The onboarding system to create a new database, that's one microservice. Running the database might be another microservice. So the SQL database is built on a microservices architecture, for instance. So each microservice has a unique name that you can reference, and you can interact with other microservices and use stuff like REST and the internet to communicate. That basically is sort of the core foundational pieces of what a microservice is. It's a way of taking your big application and breaking it down into smaller chunks, independently versionable and deployable chunks that intercommunicate. That's what a microservice is. And to become a little bit more, even more technical, a microservice is logically consistent even if something fails. I mean, it would be horrible for Microsoft if Bing, that name, goes down, right? If you know, speakers on stage suddenly don't have that popping up when they're doing presentations, that would be inconvenient. So that service can never go down, right? So even if something fails in an Azure data center, it can't go down. You can host that in sort of a container-based fashion, the microservices. You can run that in some sort of container. I'll talk more about the technical aspects in a bit. And typically, it's typically developed by a small engineering team. So maybe, like, you can envision, for instance, that the SQL database have a team that works on the create new database, onboarding, set up new database microservice, which is part of the SQL database offering, right? That's, you can sort of see that team in Redmond somewhere coding away. All right. A microservice can be, you know, it's technology agnostic. You can run anything as a microservice, that, you know, any code that runs, it can be defined as a microservice. And Microsoft then have sort of defined or split the universe into two here, talking about a stateless microservice or a stateful microservice. The cloud services that we know and love and have been around in Azure for years and years are stateless in nature. We've always been taught by Microsoft that you can't have local state in your instances of your cloud services, because if one instance goes down, that state disappears with the service instance, right? So we've been taught that we should use stuff like Azure Storage or SQL Database, other services, to maintain state, some caching technology maybe, but the instances of our cloud services should be stateless. That's been the mode. And now they've added a stateful option to microservices, and that's really powerful and really handy in some scenarios. Right. So a stateless service then uses an external storage to maintain state and can have lots of instances. And a stateful service, inversely then, a stateful service that has state replicates state on local persistence in the instances. So if you have your service running on multiple instances, all of those instances will have a copy of the state. And well, I'll show you that in a nice picture so that you can better understand what that means. What happens then is that this will reduce latency a lot in your application, because state is right in the box that you're calling to. And also that it will reduce the complexity of your architecture for your application a lot. And that's also quite convenient and important. So let's look at a picture, because, you know, the other stuff was words. And as we know, pictures are, you know, 1,000 words or something. Here's your normal three-tier service pattern, right? You have a load balancer and some front ends and a stateless compute middle tier and some storage. There's your third tier. So 1, 2, 3 tiers, normal. Everyone in this room has, I bet, have drawn a picture like this at some point. Then you a problem way back when was to scale out the data tier used to be a single point of failure down here with the database, and now we have technology to do scaling, to do elasticity on the data tier. You do sharding or something like that, so you can scale out your data tier and have, you know, really, really big applications running like this. But when you do, you might need to start to offload, or maybe use a queuing pattern to offload some workload and stuff like that, right? So probably some queues will start to show up in your architecture. And to reduce latency, you might want to use some caching technology to offload also the data tier and reduce latency. You probably want to have some caching, right? And to manage sort of transactional internal workflows and stuff, you might want to start using some internal queues communicating inside of your application. And now the picture is getting complex, right? There are a lot of moving parts here. Any one of these pieces can fail. You have to write code to handle this. You have to manage this. You have to make this work. So moving parts, etc., right? Well, here's the stateful services design. Right? A stateful services design. The data is there and there and there replicated inside of this tier here. You still might have your front ends, your web tier, taking lots of requests, incoming requests from users, etc., and getting data and shipping off work down to a sort of a service tier. But every piece of state is in there, so you don't have to actually cache anything. And this also supports basic things like queues and dictionaries and things like that, so you can store your data statefully replicated across this tier. So this basically makes your world really, really much more simpler when you draw your architecture. So you have your low latency, and you can partition and scale out your tier here for all your backend workloads, so you can just basically scale it out to a lot. I mean, again, being the name I can't say, has a lot of machines, thousands of machines running in a huge cluster to make that service run. And transaction support also means that you can do transactions across this stateful data tier. And basically what it means is that you have fewer moving parts in your application. And then, of course, you will use data stores for backup purposes and other stuff. Like you will still use databases. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you can do a lot of stuff architecturally inside of this tier instead of making your world very complex. So another big picture. We're going to focus on the bottom part, this piece. This Microsoft has shown this. This is what's going to happen with Service Fabric. You're, of course, going to be able, you can already run Service Fabric in Azure. You will be able to run it on Linux. You can run it on the Windows Server in Azure. But you can also run Service Fabric on-prem. The same solution on your own virtual machines or something that you have in your data center. You can run Service Fabric there, or, you know, potentially in another cloud. You could run, I'm not going to say the names of any other clouds here, but you know which other clouds are out there. You could run Service Fabric there as well. It doesn't matter to Service Fabric whether you're running it in Azure. And that's a really good strength if you think about it. You can develop stuff locally. You could deploy it to Azure if you want to. You can scale every which way. So Service Fabric is really cool that way.
Question.
Yes, sir. Question. So what kind of demands does the question I'm repeating for the recording, what kind of demands does Service Fabric put on the local, if you're running on your own infrastructure? Well, you'll need to have a set of virtual machines. They can be physical. You need to have a set of Windows servers as it is today. You will be able to have other operating systems. But you need to have a set of Windows servers, and you need to install Service Fabric on them. That's basically it. And then there are, of course, some, you know, minimum amount of CPU, minimum amount of RAM and disk and such. And I actually don't know the exact specs for that. But, you know, it's if you want to know, you can find out. It's not that difficult. It's basically standard servers. And Service Fabric, I have some more pictures showing this in a while. There's a lot inside of the Service Fabric that Microsoft have sort of built one solution for. A lot of details in here that Microsoft felt that they had several teams with the same challenge. They needed to build big, scalable, you know, highly available, durable, failover resilient services. So, and then, you know, they had one team that needed that and another and another and another, and their plan, they had a pipeline of services being built. Then they felt that, you know, maybe we should build one fabric to host all these services. So they built one Service Fabric, and now all the teams are using the same one. Okay? So they've already solved the problem. That means that you, if you choose to use something like Service Fabric, don't have to build or maintain or handle any of this stuff. It's already built for you. So if you break it down, it looks, you know, into larger groupings of functionality. It looks something like this. And I was debating with myself, should I approach this from the top down or from the bottom up? I don't think we have time in this session to cover yet, you know, everything. But we will talk about some of these pieces, and I decided to go from bottom up first. Start at the bottom with the transportation subsystems and the federation subsystems and explain to you what that means. Explain to you how Service Fabric sort of hangs together. If you have your typical data center, it comes back actually to the question which was just asked, so thank you for that one. If you have your typical data center, you have physical or virtual machines in there. It could be your on-premise data center, it could be in the cloud. What you do when you install Service Fabric or a similar technology is that you create a cluster of nodes that you join together. And you can add nodes to this. If a node fails, it'll drop out, and you know, that's what a cluster is. And this thing can scale to thousands of machines, right? So think of it that way. So I have a picture here to show you a small cluster, you know, logical picture of a small cluster. All of the machines connected together. So let's deploy an application there. A red application has a primary node, which takes incoming requests, which responds to incoming requests and such, and have replicated secondaries, active secondary nodes, also in the deployment. So when data inside of this guy changes, it'll be replicated to the other ones. So your application instance has several backups running. We add our blue application, our green, orange, and silver applications. When you deploy instances of something, it'll just spread itself out across the available nodes. The Service Fabric will figure out where a deployment should go, and it'll just go and deploy something. Uh-oh, node failure. What happens when a node goes down? You see there are some applications just hanging in limbo there. Of course, they go down as well, right? So the first thing the fabric does is repairs itself, connects itself back together, and notices that a node is gone. What do we do now? Well, first of all, we know that there is a green service that now doesn't have a primary, right? The green one has secondary, but no primary. So the first thing it does, it promotes a secondary. You are now the primary. So that this green service is now running again. It can respond to incoming requests, and it's actually running. And then it needs also to, you can see, add some more secondaries, right? Because a couple of secondaries were on this machine, so a red secondary. And also this is kind of interesting. A new secondary was created for the loss of the other primary. So that's basically like just a sketch showing you roughly the functionality of a cluster of machines working together. And this means that you never lose state, you never lose availability if, you know, in the presence of some kind of failure inside of the cluster. It's pretty powerful. So to go into detail a little bit more on the communication stuff, the replication piece, for instance, reads are completed on the primary. Normally, the primary answers a read request and just gives the response right back. And it's low latency again, because the data, oftentimes that needs to be returned, is in this node. It doesn't have to go to a database or a cache or anything to find the data. It's really fast to just serve the result from the local state on that machine. Yes?
Is every node with a primary equivalent to a web role instance?
Is every node with a primary equivalent to a web role instance? Well, this can be a service. This can be an API. So it could be a web application. Certainly run an ASP.NET application in here, but it can be an API as well. So it's you know, one of the two. It's something that has a connection, or something that someone can connect to and serve it, you know, make requests to and get some answers from. So a web or an API or something like that. Good question. Yes. So basically, request comes in, response goes back. Easy peasy. Right. On the other hand, need to be written not only on the primary. This is, for some of you who know a lot about SQL database, again, I keep going back to that. Let's say that this is SQL database. What Microsoft keep telling you is that they have, you know, you don't write to only one instance when you write to your SQL database in the Azure SQL Database Service. You write to more than one instance. And it looks like this, okay? Write comes in, and then it's written to all the secondaries. All the secondaries are synced up with the write, incoming write. And the secondaries will acknowledge the write and say, yes, I have acknowledged, I've got your write. And when enough secondaries, you see there's one missing, when enough secondaries have responded, the response goes back to the user. Okay? So now almost all of them are in sync, right? And then the straggler comes in and says, yeah, got it. Okay? So that's how this system keeps in sync. When enough of the secondaries have responded, then the write is good. So again, if the primary fails and goes away, a secondary is promoted to primary. Right? If a secondary fails, it just drops away. And, you know, fine, whatever. The secondary is gone. Okay. This system now suddenly reappears. The last primary comes back and says, oh, wait a minute, I'm back. Hey, I just, you know, took a break. I'm back. Well, the new primary is going to say, well, sorry, dude, you're not the primary anymore. You're now the secondary. And by the way, catch up to what we've been doing since you know, in the meantime when you were gone. So to catch back up to the current state of things. So that syncing, maintaining that synced state, is nothing that you ever have to code. That's in the service fabric for you automatically. You just take advantage of that. And then, of course, at this time, we also had a failure in one of the secondaries. So we'll copy one of the secondaries or the primary and create ourselves a new instance to get back to the state that we needed. Okay, all of this is handled by service fabric again. You don't have to think about that. But now you kind of know how it functions, which was the point of me showing you this. So that's the low-level stuff. Okay, low-level, let's go to high-level. Let's go to how do we develop stuff for this? Because that's what we really want to do. We want to develop stuff. All right, so developing. The API for Service Fabric is basically two pieces. It's the Reliable Services API and the Reliable Actors API. I'm going to briefly intro you to both of them and show you a little bit of boilerplate Hello World style code, because we just want to know how things work. We can't go into deep functionality in this session. So we have these two options. The Reliable Services API helps you build, you know, stateless services, for instance, ASP.NET applications. It helps you build stateful services, maybe your APIs or something like that, that wants to maintain some sort of state, using what's called reliable collections. And you know, concurrency and state and all that stuff is handled inside of transactions as well. So this has transaction support, and you can communicate with any normal thing like, you know, web APIs or VCF or whatever with your Service Fabric services API. So reliable collections, what are those? Well, you know collections in .NET, right? You have your dictionaries and stuff. They started out as single machine, single threaded implementations. And then one evolutionary jump later, you get your concurrent collections. We have those. You can run them on a single machine. You can run them multi-threaded. Okay, those are built into the .NET framework, and those we use them all the time. Reliable collections is the next step in the evolution. They are things you can run on multiple machines. They have high availability replication built into them, and they are persistent, they're durable, and you have to work with these guys asynchronously. Obviously, because if you do a write to one of them, they have to go and acknowledge to all the other sync up with all the other ones, and they have to come back, and you don't know exactly how long time that will take. It'll be quick, but you don't know exactly how fast that will be, which means that you are now in a distributed failover high availability world, and in such a world you will work asynchronously. No option there. And of course, this supports, again, transactions. So that's really cool. When you just address these collections, you get all that stuff built in. So let's go to Visual Studio, because we all love that. Here's Visual Studio in full screen mode. And I use... Excuse me. I use Evil Visual Studio, the dark version. Let's create ourselves a new project. I'm really going to do file new project, okay? So no mysteries here. Service Fabric application. Now that looks good. You see I've done a couple of dry runs on this machine. When you say I want to have a new Service Fabric application, you get five options currently. An ASP.NET web service, stateful and stateless services and actors. We'll do a stateful service, just so I will show you what that means. When I create a small stateful Service Fabric service application, I will have two projects. One will be the actual code. The other one will be sort of a packaging project. Pretty much exact the same setup as a cloud service has. So if I can see, I can build this stuff, make sure that everything is synced up and ready. Good. So this is what I get. I get the service called Stateful One, and I get my packaging application. And the most important piece in here is the application manifest, which defines our service. This XML stuff here defines the service. And you can have multiple services in your application. This is the application manifest for the entire application. You can have multiple services in here. I only have one, but you can have many. And then we have the stateful service, which references the service fabric and has a service and an entry point. And this is not a secret or a mystery or anything. This is, let's see, make it bigger. Right. I need to make it bigger down here. I don't have my mouse. There we go. This is a, .NET. This is C# code. This is a program with an entry point. There's no magic or secrets or anything here. This is code. This is a small application, right? So this will create your Service Fabric runtime instance, and you register your microservice, stateful one in this case. You're registering microservice inside of your Fabric runtime, and then you say, go, do your thing. The thing that it does is this. In this case, it'll have a counter that it will update, increment, when we run this service. I'll show you that in a second. But what I wanted to show you here in the code is this, for instance. I go, you see that I inherit from Stateful Service. Okay, Stateful Service has a state manager, and the state manager can go into my state and find me, for instance, a reliable dictionary. So here we have the reliable collections in the service fabric. Get me an instance of a reliable dictionary with a name my dictionary, and bring that out for me. And then the state manager can also create a transaction. So begin a transaction inside of my using statement and read from my dictionary, do something with it, in this case, write it out to a log. That's not very exciting, but that's what we're doing. And then write something else to my dictionary inside of the same transaction. And if I'm good, then I'll go and commit this whole thing. And as you can see, again, we're using task, we're using async await, and we're using reliable dictionaries and transactions, and everything is just built into Service Fabric for you. It's really sweet and super powerful. So this thing can run. And where can I run this thing? Well, I can run it locally. I can F5 and run this thing on my local machine. So I have installed Service Fabric on my local machine, and I'm running a cluster of 5 nodes on my local machine. Okay? And so I can F5 debug stuff, breakpoints, all of that same good old stuff really runs and works great. So this is the thing deploying, setting itself up. You're seeing events here coming in, diagnostic events. And there we go, counter value. Current counter value, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. Okay? This is the counter now counting and keeping and maintaining state running on my local machine. If I want to, I can, let's say I want to go and set a breakpoint. It's not very exciting that I can actually hit a breakpoint, but it's good to know that this runs as normal as always. Here on my local machine, I have this little service fabric thingy, and I can also open up the Service Fabric Explorer, which is a tool that comes with the Service Fabric. It's not a very pretty tool, but it is what it is. It shows the local cluster that I have on my local machine. There are some system services running for the Service Fabric. All of the things inside the Service Fabric that makes it run, the failover management and the naming and address stuff and all that, all those things are running as services on the fabric itself. Okay, we don't have to bother much with those, but we have our application running on the fabric. Our instance is called application 4, and it's running on the service fabric. I can drill down to it, and I can see that, yes, my package is running in a partition, it's called, and my code is running on 3 nodes, node 1, node 4, and node 5. Are running my code. You can see that there's a primary and an active secondary. Is it big enough, the screen? I can zoom in. That's better, maybe. So you can see that my code is actually running there. And if I go back to Visual Studio, it's still counting. Nothing out of the ordinary there. It's still counting away, writing out the messages every time it counts. And so if I do this, then node 1, you say, OK, here's my whole cluster running on my local box. So node 1, yes, indeed, it's running application 4, and that's the primary. So what if I go down to the code, the actual code package running on that node, my code that I deployed on my local cluster, that's it. That's the code right there. What if I go to that and say, maybe restart it? Restart the thing. Well, this Visual Studio notices this, but the thing is that it's still up and running, and it's still counting and still working. I just restarted the primary node. I just did that, and it doesn't bother the application at all. That's fine. It might have been so quick that it actually just kept the primary. It is still actually the primary. What we can do just to mess things up completely is we can take the entire node 1 offline. Let's stop the entire node And it might, I might get some red warning messages and stuff when I do that sort of thing. But I've taken an entire node offline, and this application, this little tool isn't, you know, super, super great. Sometimes it doesn't work perfectly. Let's see, loading content, please wait. We'll see. Maybe it comes back. But basically what I did was I crashed the whole node, and you can see some messages saying, whoa, wait a minute, diagnostics from Service Fabric saying, wow, something is down and something is wrong and stuff. But it's still counting. It doesn't matter. It doesn't care. It's still counting. It's resilient. So the other nodes are picking up the slack, right? Let's see if we can come back to this guy. Maybe not. I'll shut that down and we'll see. We'll just go back to the tool again. Maybe it'll work. We'll see. Now, something is up with this tool or the cluster or whatever. The cluster is still there. You can see down here, node 5 is not working. I don't know. Something. But you can see the point is, I need to move on. The point is that this code runs and it just, you can't kill this thing if you try. You can shut down my machine. That'll kill it. All right? So, big demo there, just walking around reliable services and that API, okay? Cool? Any questions? Any thoughts? Is this useful, you think? Yes, very useful. I'm getting lots of nods. I'm getting lots of nods from the audience. All right, cool. So, reliable actors, then, are a different thing. They are stateless and stateful objects that have what we call a virtual actor programming model. Anyone here heard of Orleans? Project Orleans, lots of you have, especially you guys who have been here before at Cloudburst, obviously, because we've had a presentation on that at Cloudburst. Last year?
Yeah.
Yes, last year, by Sergey, by Bykov of Microsoft, who has been building Orleans. This is sort of a piece of that. It's involved here in the actor model. If you have multiple independent units of state and compute, maybe Halo, if you have ever heard of a little game called Halo, they're using the actor model, they're using one actor for every player, right? If you have multiple little units like that, that you can attribute some methods on, like start game, stop game, whatever, die, maybe it's a method in Halo, I don't know. Then you might use actors. Then actors might be a good thing to use in your code. The cool thing is that these actors, there we go. The service fabric is not doing very well on my machine since I was being such a bad boy with it. Let's just go back and see. Nah, it's still, I don't know what it's doing. Never mind. I wanted to see if I could show you that. Well, actually the service, even when I pressed I stopped F5ing, I stopped running in Visual Studio, the application is still running in my cluster. So it's there. I can flush it out if I want to, but it is there, it's still running. anyway, back to actors. All of the state management inside of your actors, it's managed by by the fabric. So it has a programming model that looks something like this. You create your interface, iHelloWorld, inheriting iActor. You implement that interface. You give it a body, implement it in a class. And then you register your actor implementation in your fabric and say, I have an actor with this interface. Stop doing that. Maybe I should stop the program. Go away. Yes, so I implement this and I register my actor in my fabric saying this actor exists. And then when I want to use that, I go and connect to it. So I have some code. I'm just going to show you the code on this one. Recently, projects, this one. here's an actor. This is a stateful actor because it inherits actor of T. I could also have a stateless actor, which would inherit only actor. But a stateful actor has some sort of state which is defined. I can go to that state and see that, yes, it's a count. This stateful actor has a count property. And it's serializable, as you can see. Every piece of state that you put inside of an actor needs to be serializable because it's synced and maintained underneath the covers by Service Fabric. Again, you don't do that. And then I can interact with this state. I can do stuff like I can assign a new state to it. I can increase the state count. State.count is then the property of my actor T, in this case, the counter state. So I can go and I can interact with the state of my actor maintaining that state, storing and replicating and handling that state is done with the service fabric. So I can then call to a service from maybe a client application. It can then go and say, well, actor proxy, create myself an I counter actor, and give me that I counter thing. And then I can do stuff like I can get count. I can call methods on my oh, I didn't show you the interface. The I counter interface has a couple of methods that I can call. So I can instantiate these actors and I can interact with the actors and state will just be maintained. So then you can you know, if you extrapolate from a foolish little counter actor to something like a Halo player actor, you find something which is considerably larger than this and has lots of logic and stuff. But it is a piece of logic and state. That's what an actor is. Any thoughts on that? Questions? Good, because I'm quickly running out of time in my presentation. All right. Actually, I'm not running out of time. I'm near the end. You saw a little bit of it. Yes, question.
How do you prevent race conditions when setting stuff to the actor?
How do you prevent race conditions when setting stuff to the actor?
Yeah.
Right. That is a good question, and it's a complicated answer to that one. Basically, you can initiate transactions on them as well, and they have support for that. And I suppose there can be such scenarios. I don't have a really great answer prepared for that, but the instance of an actor is running on one instance of your fabric nodes. So whenever somebody wants to talk to that instance, the request will go to that machine, which hosts that instance of that actor. So it will be in one node, the instance of that actor. And every time you will call that actor, you will call that specific instance. So therefore, that will probably, you know, line it up, all the requests that come to one specific actor. I mean, if a Halo player gets a gut shot and a headshot at the same time, which takes precedence, well, you're still dead. But I think you understand what I mean.
What is an
iReliable dictionary? That was part of the reliable collections, which are part of the service fabric. So the reliable dictionaries are I explained before, the next evolution of collections. You can use your normal dictionaries in .NET, right? You can create a new dictionary. But the reliable dictionary is an implementation inside of the service fabric, which maintains high availability and syncing and state replication and stuff underneath the covers. You just say, get me an instance of this dictionary, and replication and state management and that stuff is nothing you ever have to worry about. It is a distributed dictionary, highly available distributed dictionary. Correct. Good. Great question. Awesome. Rounding up, diagnostics and troubleshooting. I'm just going to mention that event tracing for Windows and Azure, Windows Azure Diagnostics, the WAD and stuff, is used by Service Fabric already. It's built in. So you can just tap into that and get lots of operational insights and monitoring data and statistics and everything. You can just, you know, maintain and manage your cluster of nodes using all this trace, which is already built in. So a lot of the maintenance and monitoring stuff is already handled, and you just need to monitor. And then you have lots of instances doing. I just wanted to mention it. I'm not gonna, you know, we won't have time to talk a lot about this. This is a whole another story. I mean, how do you deploy? How do you upgrade? How do you monitor? Well, that's a big piece of the puzzle that we actually don't have time to talk too much about today. But yes, that's part of the story as well. You need to be able to somehow manage your cluster of machines. If you go and create a service fabric in Azure, that I can do. I don't want to show you this because it's a part of the private preview and you kind of need to be onboarded. Anyone can go and onboard to this. And I'll show you some links for the video and for you that you can go and onboard into this, but I don't want to show it off too much. I can click on it and show you that, yes, I do indeed have an actual cluster running in Azure with 5 nodes. This is running in my Azure subscription, 5-node cluster. I could have deployed my application, my counter, to this cluster instead of deploying it to my local machine. So you can do that as well. And when you do that, you'll need to have some way of maintaining it, which is why I'm showing this piece. Okay? Now, do we have any more questions? Yes, question. Is it possible to allow secondary instances to answer reads as well? The answer to the question is no, not at this time. And it is a question of scale eventually. If you have like a billion incoming requests, can the primary actually handle all of them? I don't have like a full answer to how much load can that take, but that's one virtual machine instance running an incarnation of your service that might run other secondaries. The same virtual machine might run secondaries of other services. It might run other primaries and stuff. So it's all about how much traffic can one node take. So I suppose in theory you could hit the ceiling on that, and I'm not actually sure what happens then. You get a slow service maybe. No, you cannot. Can you spin up multiple primaries? No, you can't. So typically, the picture I showed with the reads being serviced by the primary is the way to go. That's what you have. And, you know, obviously it's working pretty well for Microsoft for some services. So yeah, I think it's decent. You would have to trust that the service fabric cluster knows when stuff is overheated, when a machine is running, you know, max near its capacity and it's not doing well. First of all, that shows up in your diagnostic logs. And second, that it knows to reconfigure stuff if that happens. When something is hot, it can move pieces of the hotness away and spread it out. And you don't have to think about that. It should just happen automatically. But that's a great question. Other questions? Yes. 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 Right. So when you write to the primary, will go and write to all the secondaries. And the question is, how do you avoid latency in these scenarios with enough secondaries responding? Well, the answer is, it's really quick, so you don't have to bother. it is using really, I mean, it's using UDP and really optimized stuff under covers, and it is really fast. And again, think of you know, high performing, super big databases in Azure in the SQL database service are running on Service Fabric. So I mean, thinking of maybe committing a SQL database transaction with replication and getting back the acknowledgement and response in a timely manner, you know, it works for SQL database. Basically, is my best answer to that. Oh, that's a big question. How many acknowledges are needed? Depends on the service. We're actually running out of time. It's a great question, and if you have additional ones, you should feel free to talk to me afterwards. This is for the recording, so people who are watching can pause. If you guys want these slides and such, you can get them. There's a future direction for this. It'll run on Windows and Linux and stuff, right? Right now it's working on Windows and such. So there are future directions for the Service Fabric. And if you want to join the Service Fabric, the call to action slide here shows you which URLs you should browse to. Take a photo. It's going to be in the recording, and for those of you watching, you can press pause. And right, so that's basically that's it. What we've learned is that microservices is an awesome way of architecting, and the service fabric is really, really cool. And PaaS V2 is sort of the future. That's what we learned today. I hope you enjoyed the session. Thank you very much for attending.